Welcome to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. I know I always want to say good morning. It's implied now. All those years we said good morning. It's over. Bill.
Aaron.
Bob.
Unless you're listening to the Philadelphia broadcast on the West Coast, then it is, in fact, morning.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But that's tricky.
Yeah, but that is very extra tricky. All righty. So we are being joined by, in progress, I guess, by Kristen Rule. She is in Philadelphia, and she is a whistleblower with the Philadelphia VA. She still works at the VA. It's important to kind of note that. And she is an authorization quality review specialist at the Philadelphia Regional Office. And let's see, I read a little thing here. Yep, August. She will have been there 8 years. So basically she provides a quality review on the accuracy of benefits payments paid out to beneficiaries from the VA. And previous shows, we talk a lot about claims that aren't being processed at all. So now we're looking at the other end of the spectrum where they're double paying and overpaying and, you know, I guess once you get the ball rolling, it's pretty easy for it to go quickly downhill or something.
I'll bet you're a very popular person with management there in Philadelphia.
They're on a first-name basis. but you weren't alone in the hearing last week. And for folks just joining us on this hour, I've linked to that, Philadelphia and Oakland, Systemic Failures and Mismanagement, and the video is up. There's also a hearing from October of 2014, July of 2014, and there's another article in here, New York Times, and I'm sure there are others that could be researched, but you've been kind of all over the place, huh, Kristen?
I'm trying my best to reach out and get as much attention on the issue so hopefully things can change.
Well, that, unfortunately, is what has to happen. I mean, you can't, you know, these things don't fix themselves because the top dogs really don't want the problems highlighted at all. And they'll kind of do anything to keep it quiet.
Yes, it's unfortunate, but that is definitely what I've learned. I started, when I first noticed there was problems in the office, I thought that they would want to know the problem, so I was reporting things, thinking I was helping them. But I quickly learned that they had no interest in caring about anything I was saying, so I had to, instead of reporting things up the internal VA chain of command, I actually tried to use some external sources, and that was the only time that I had any success with getting any attention on the problem.
Now, in real life, you would do, from the position that you're in, if you see something goofed up, you would go to a supervisor who is how far from the director? How many people up?
Let's see, it would be about, I guess, fourth down, because we would have a supervisor, and then we would have assistant managers of the department, and then the manager of the department, then the assistant directors, and then our director. So between four and five notches.
Okay, so you're not, it's not like you're, you know, opening mail. I mean, you're somebody who should have the ear of leadership at your center.
Well, you would think, because the job that I do, since we do the quality reviews and we check accuracy of benefits and we're supposed to be making sure laws are applied correctly, I thought that when somebody brought up the fact that there was a problem in any of those categories, that they would think, oh, these people do this every day, they should know, and maybe we should listen to what they have to say. But it has not been that way inside the building.
Yeah, which is the most frustrating part, I would imagine. Now, you also have another, you can add another spin to this, because you went to law school and practice law? I don't think we talked about that.
No, I don't practice law. I went to law school, and I did a few legal jobs, different jobs in the law field, but I didn't enjoy what I was doing, and I thought that working for the U.S. government would be the perfect job because the schedule was more of an 8.5-hour day, and at the time I had a young son, so I wanted to be home with him. But I've gotten into doing legal work at the VA by accident. It's been interesting.
And you, so you wind up helping people there, like your coworkers and stuff, who are having trouble trying to figure, I mean, because obviously if you're going to file a complaint against your employer, it's hard enough in, you know, regular business. But when you work for the government, it just adds a whole nother layer of complexity. So you actually do help people that you work with.
Yeah, that's been really one of the most enjoyable parts of my job in the last few years, because a lot of people were being wronged internally, and they would go for help, and they would want to stand up for themselves, but they quickly noticed that it's very hard to get a lawyer to take these cases unless someone's been fired. There's not a lot of money in these kind of cases. So if a lawyer has a choice to do a medical malpractice case or, you know, something that has major damages and spend their billable hours on these types of cases, I'm noticing that the EEO-type cases are not first choice for anybody who's a practicing attorney. They generally bill out between $300 and $500 an hour. So, I mean, for somebody who's getting a two-day suspension and wants to have, you know, that looked at and argue that their rights were violated, they're going to end up paying probably $20,000 to a lawyer to help them. And at some point, you have to think, is it worth it to pay that much money for a two-day suspension? So I noticed that people were afraid to speak up because they really didn't know how to speak up. They didn't have training in the law. They weren't sure how to defend themselves. They were filing a lot of union grievances, but that process takes a few years in our building. I had a union grievance, and unfortunately, it took about 2 years to get my suspension erased. So people started to file these EEO complaints, and I noticed that they were hesitant because they had no one to help them and guide them with the process. So I figured if we need people to stand up, I'm going to have to stand up in their corner so they're not afraid to speak out. So I found a loophole in the law that allows an employee of the VA to represent other employees in an EEO matter. So people would file their claims, and I will make a point, I never encourage people to file a claim, but once someone has filed their own claim, if they approach me and ask me for help, I usually don't turn them down unless I think that their issue doesn't have any merit. Of course, if the VA is right, I'm not going to help them out on a case, the employee, when sure. they're wrong. So I usually evaluate the case, and for the most part, I've helped over 20 people with different issues against our office, and I tried to put a spotlight on what was going on by when these people filed these claims for them not to give in, stick with it, and try and prove their point, because I figured strength in numbers would probably get us a long way. So it's a lot of work for me in my spare time, but it's rewarding because, you know, and tell me thank you so much, you got me my life back, or one guy said, hey, I was fired, you got me my job back. So, you know, it's a good feeling when you can help somebody like that.
Well, that is what is needed in a lot of these other centers, because the folks we've spoken with before, like in Oakland, for instance, they're just picked off one by one. You know, they're cut out of the herd. And I don't know, they're either like in Rusty Ann Brown's case, she's given all these military sexual trauma cases, which is a huge problem for her since she is someone who was, you know, was hurt by that. And it just messes up her whole life, and they torment them until they leave. They either retire early or they quit or they get so sick. I love it. I don't know if this happens at your center, but those guys, if they go out on sick leave, I know at least two people who have been fired because they were out on sick leave.
Oh, yeah. We have AWOL charges when people use sick leave. And our office, they, you know, they have a lot of power, so they will try and do things to an employee who, if they want to remove them, they'll give them extra work to do. They'll move them to a team that is a little harder to survive on. The things that they do to people, they don't equal what the law will say is a personnel action. So it's hard to be labeled it as retaliation.
Really?
So if it starts to happen to you, yeah, it's the law for a whistleblower. If you whistleblower, you bring up an issue and you want to argue whistleblower retaliation, you have to prove that a personnel action has occurred. Personnel actions are things like suspensions of 14 days or more, a firing, if you apply for a job and you can prove that, you know, you were supposed to be the most qualified, you are the most qualified, and they did not pick you, but that's a very high burden. It doesn't cover the trivial nonsense that the management will do to you on a day-to-day basis. You know, they'll follow you around on your breaks. They'll time your breaks. They've accused me of slandering people when I have no idea what they're talking about. But none of these things, if you file this with the Office of Special Counsel and say, hey, I'm being retaliated against, none of those things count. So
you're kidding.
I've been actually trying to change the law and the definition of whistleblower retaliation, because I truly feel that if the normal everyday nonsense that they put you through, it was covered, or if someone is found to, you know, be in violation and they lose an EEO complaint, I think that should go against the manager's rating for the year. Somehow the managers in my office still get bonuses, which you'd have to get an outstanding or excellent rating to get a bonus. So I'm wondering why they're found to have illegally fired somebody, or they're settling a high number of EEO claims, how these managers are still getting a good rating for the year.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea. Well, I think most of us know that when people come forward as a whistleblower, it's just a matter of time before, you know, they get tormented out. But I guess I didn't realize that there was such a high bar on the retaliation. That's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people don't speak out. I mean, it kind of stands to reason.
And there's usually, I mean, I haven't seen any accountability yet in my office. So, you know, in the defense of the employees, at some point, sometimes I wonder, was doing the right thing speaking out? Because you don't see, when you keep trying your best to bring up issues that are harming employees and veterans and anybody that has to deal with our office, it's very frustrating when you see the people that are causing the problems never held accountable.
Yeah, and that's very, very consistent. That's the part that makes the public crazy. They see them, you know, break all these laws, lie to Congress and all that stuff, and then, you know, everybody goes back to work. It's, anyway. Nothing. I have nothing nice to say. I guess it's probably time to take a break.
Well, it's so hard to swallow. I mean, these managers are just doing criminal acts, and they're never made accountable. I mean, that's the part that has to change.
Yeah,
they like to plead ignorance, which I don't think should be accepted, because in our office there's been a couple occasions where, instead of saying we did this purposefully, they say we didn't understand what that meant. But if you're getting paid on a GS scale of a GS 15, you're probably making around, I don't know, 120 to 150,000, give or take a few. And you should understand a majority of laws and policies that pertain to the office that you work in. And if you don't, at some point, I wonder, are you really supposed to have that job?
Exactly. I think at that level, you're supposed to know the rules, and you're supposed to keep your subordinates in line, and they just don't. They don't care.
Well, it winds up being the subordinates that are trying to keep the managers in line, and the power structure is absolutely slated against them.
Yes, the problems, don't get me wrong, the power is not with the subordinates.
Yeah.
It's with the leadership.
Things upside down.
It's totally upside down.
We need to ask you about unions and stuff like that when we come back, because we have a lot of questions. You look at this from a whole different perspective than we have seen before. So we'll be returning with Kristen Rule, talking about the Philadelphia VA, here at We the People Radio in 2 minutes. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. No, they wouldn't lie to Congress, not the VA. That's why we have to have a whistleblower panel in front of every VA management panel. Frustrating. You are joining We the People Radio. We're here with Kristen Rule. We've got a whole bunch of information on the multiple hearings about Philadelphia, and information from Kristen on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. Okay, so Kristen, back to you. What about this union deal? We're always hearing that the union is, I mean, not just in VA, but all over the place. The union protects the bad employees. Well, if that's true, then it should help the good ones, but it doesn't seem to do either. Like, what do you guys see out your way?
I think our union does their best to protect the employees in general from their rights being violated. And they, with the system that they have, I think they do the best job that they can. The problem is, if you file a grievance with the union, the person who, there's three steps in the process. The first step, you have to go before, if I file a grievance against my supervisor, the first step is to do a meeting with that supervisor. I don't think I've ever seen, in at least anything I've been involved with, that that supervisor admits they're wrong, even if they are. So the grievance then moves to step two. At that point, it goes to that supervisor's boss. And at step three, it'll go to the director or whoever they designate to hear that grievance. So as you can see, no matter how good the intentions are of the union, at least in our office, the decision makers are very biased, because usually it's not, I've never seen the VA admit that they made a mistake. Mm-hmm. Until an outside party, either a judge or a case goes to arbitration, that's when they either decide it's time to settle the case, or they'll admit that they might have made a mistake, and maybe, you know, or the judge will tell them that they were wrong. So usually the idea for the union is supposed to be to work problems out before they get to be at such a high level. But in our experience, when management has no interest in working any problems out and can't admit that they make mistakes or do anything wrong, it's very hard for the union to be effective. Now, the union does, they'll represent people in EEO complaints and other outside-type avenues, which I think they're extremely successful in. But the grievance is, if managers are not willing to look at this with an open mind, sometimes I say, what's the purpose of even filing a grievance? Because I know that my decision maker will be biased.
Yeah, and we hear that a lot. That seems to be a pretty common problem. And since you've dealt with it so long, any ideas on how you fix that?
Well, my only thing that has been successful for me is the media. So I feel like the union needs to maybe do more things with the media. I was really proud because our president of our union testified on the whistleblower panel.
Oh, that's
right. That said a lot. Yeah, so that was an awesome step in the right direction. It showed all the employees, hey, I have your back. I don't agree that this stuff is okay. And it seems to me that the only way to get the VA to do the right thing is when they're exposed.
Yeah, which is a tough way to run a giant. How many people work at the Philadelphia Center?
I honestly don't know. But there's a lot. I mean, I would say there's probably about 400 people in my department.
Just in your department?
Yeah, and we have an insurance center. We have a call center. We house a national call center and a pension call center. We have a compensation department, a pension department. So I would guess maybe 1,000 people, but I'm really not sure.
Huh. I was just curious. I mean, it's one of the, is it one of the largest in the country? If not, the largest?
Yeah, that's why they said that we had to have someone so skilled as Diana Rubin to come on our office, because it's one of the largest offices in the country.
Wow. And your ability to get to, like, the director of your office and you know, try to straighten things out is, like, zero?
Well, recently, in the last year, it's quite easy to get a hold of her, because I think since I made a decision to speak out, unfortunately, I feel that they operate out of fear, and if I send an email up there and they don't respond to it, sometimes they think, well, when we ignored her situations before, we read about them in the paper, and we heard about them in hearings. So Diana Rubin, you know, I communicate with her quite often. However, I would say the average employee in our office, it is very difficult to get to the director. Sometimes you have to have, you know, go through a bunch of layers of people. Sometimes they delegate meetings down to the assistant directors. So if you really want to have a meeting with just her, you know, she'll say, oh, we can have a town hall meeting, but you're not having a one-on-one meeting with her, and there's usually other people there where people don't feel free to tell the truth, because all the other people that are listening will probably run back and tell other people in the office what they were saying.
Sure. So what advice would you give to somebody in another you know, another facility that doesn't have someone schooled in you know, the law that will help them. They're just a lone, person out there thinking, oh my gosh, doesn't anyone know what's going on in here? What would your advice to them be besides go to law school?
The best thing, I mean, the way that I learned about everything I've done to basically protect myself, I did not learn in law school at all. I have researched these type of laws for the last 3 years while working there because I wasn't sure even how to defend myself when I started realizing that they didn't appreciate the things I was reporting. Instead, they were trying to come after me. So I would say educate yourself on, you know, the Merit Systems Protection Board process and the EEO process. But most of all, speak out. And I think if you can get a lot of people to speak out, I think it'll effectuate change. I look at our building like the Penn State scandal, and the more people that came forward, we saw action. So if you don't stick together and you don't report things, then it doesn't help anybody, because who wants to go to work every day and be stressed out and have their rights violated?
Yeah, exactly. So it is a, you know, like we always say here, you know, you band together and you tell everybody, your odds are greater that for one you'll be protected, and for another you'll get the word out and something will get done.
And you have to know who to report things to, because I thought when I first started working there, let me report this to my supervisor, let me tell the highest person in the building what's going on, let me report this stuff to the undersecretary, Allison Hickey. But I noticed that when I was doing that, things weren't changing, and instead things were happening to me. And I realized that, you know, if you report these things outside, you get whistleblower protection, and the people on the outside definitely care and they will help you. I've had great help from the Oversight Committee, the VA Health Committee, Jeff Miller's Committee for Veterans Affairs, has really had our back. It took us a while to get their attention, but once we did, they've definitely supported us.
Yeah, because this is the third time, right, that you guys have been asked to come and testify?
Yeah.
So that's a good start, and they're starting to look into. The hard part is, you know, this all comes from, you know, this is an executive branch function. It comes from the Secretary of the VA, and Congress doesn't get to hire and fire those folks, so all they can do is keep exposing over and over. Have you seen anything, you know, actually get done because of the hearings?
The first time we testified last July, I brought up some issues, internal issues, like that we didn't have a lot of printers that worked, and I noticed that the next week we had some new printers. So there's little things that are changing. They've done a little bit of shuffling of managers, but again, that's not holding people accountable. So I haven't seen anything worthy happen in my office and anything change. They've flown in, I think, 18 people from other regional offices to come help Philadelphia and to come mend our office. However, I don't really believe that the people that are in charge of our office can be rehabilitated. After reading that IG report, it's pretty much every department has issues in our building. And they're not issues that they didn't understand things. They're issues where they made conscious decisions to leave mail in boxes for years, stamp cannot ID on things that are easily identifiable, call things return mail to be shredded, that if you open the boxes, you'll see DD214s in there, turning back date stamps for mail. These aren't things that you can train somebody on. They know the process. They made a conscious decision to not follow it.
Oh, it's totally crazy. We need to take a really quick break, and we're going to come back. Bill's got a question, and we have a caller on the line, so we're going to do lots of questions when we come back. Oh, my goodness. Thanks. We're here with Kristen Rule talking about the Philadelphia VA. You're on We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Love, but it wasn't. It's all out of
Kristen's been having trouble seeing double, mostly payments, though. Oh, my gosh. Welcome back to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Kristen Rule talking about the Philadelphia VA, and we have a caller online who has a question for Kristen. But we need Bob to push the button. Oh, we did. Fire away.
Hi, Kristen. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. One of the questions I have, since you've been to law school, you understand that criminal acts do not involve just necessarily the physical taking of money, but can occur in an administrative way. Has anybody explored all the ramifications of denial of payments or overpayments, triple payments? These people should be held personally responsible and liable for their criminal acts. They've either denied the claim, which means they took money from someone, or they've overpaid it, which meant they have committed an act of theft. We don't know what the embezzlement potential or fraud potentials of that are. Has anybody explored that, either from the AG, the Inspector General, anybody administratively?
Oh, yeah. I actually, since 2012, have been reporting the double payments to the Department of Justice, to the Office of Inspector General. I've reported it to postal inspectors, the FBI. Basically, everybody up to the U.S. President, I have sent letters, and not just myself, other whistleblowers as well. We kind of get the runaround. The Office of Inspector General did a very good job investigating this last round, but I actually wanted them to be investigated for things like fraud when I showed them the law that when you overpay somebody, you have to collect the money because you're not allowed to get more than one benefit payment per month. And that when they weren't making people pay it back and ignoring the money, I thought that it could be a crime. However, the Department of Justice nor the FBI have not had any interest in holding these people accountable. And unfortunately, there's immunity for a government employee. And just to be clear, it's not the employees, the bargaining unit employees that are doing these things. It's management who are instructing them to apply the laws a certain way. They're creatively misinterpreting the law.
Just for a moment, having dealt with fraud a good portion of my life, how do you know that there isn't collusion between the employees and the managers? That those are dummy boxes, etc. Once you start fraud can, it just permeates an organization. Everybody can go into Bermuda with their yacht.
Well, the type of things that were going on at our place, are you referring to the mail situation or the duplicate payments? Or
the double payments, triple payments? The whole payment question is criminal, but it can also be conspiratorial within the agency itself. You can have a subordinate and manager agreeing to the payments and have it in the Dropbox. There's no sense that it's going to actually the person. So the fraud is not just local one on me to you. It can be involving 6-8 people in the organization. That's the beauty of conspiracy and fraud. Has anybody really done anything with that?
Yeah, and all these payments, when we look at the cases that were paid more than one time, it's normally a beneficiary of VA money getting paid twice, and the average employee, at least it's our belief, really doesn't have any contact with that beneficiary or know them. I think the reason the payments were overlooked is because if we went in and reversed a payment and said, we're sorry, we've sent you benefits twice for the past 2 years, Mr. Veteran, we're going to create an overpayment on you. I think the VA was more concerned about the veterans calling Congress and saying, look at this, I got payments for years, and now the VA is trying to take it back. So it was easier for them to ignore.
Christine, excuse me for interrupting, but there's currently before the Social Security Administration billions. In fact, it may be a trillion payments to people that are 160 years old. dummy payments all over the place.
These payments, though, are actually real payments, and they're going to real lives.
No, those are real payments also. They're actual checks from Social Security going to a box.
They did bust these guys. I thought I remembered this in Georgia. They did. There was a little scheme with three VA employees, and the guy eventually bought a submarine, which that was the part that kind of blew up their little plans.
Yeah, it took a submarine to throw up a signal that maybe this guy's making too
much
money.
Yeah, it's like, how's the director of the VA having a submarine? Yeah, it was like $6 million. So far, none of this has been deemed to be all, they were running them all through one person's Social Security number. You haven't found that yet in Philadelphia, right?
No, like all the payments, like for instance, I found 88 of these payments in 1 month back in 2012, and I looked at them all. They're all going to the bank account of the veteran or the survivor. It's just that we were paying them too much money every single time due to a computer glitch.
Okay, so is that a criminal act on part of the veteran, or is it a criminal act on part of the managers that are paying them, or
could
both?
Be the managers, it could be the person approving.
I don't think. I mean, I think
there's
that
no
you have to have
for
find
a criminal act by a government employee. Trust me, Christine.
I just think that the employee who's working on the claim, I don't see intent on them to. I mean, it's not in their best interest to pay a claimant twice. There's really no benefit to that employee. They have to work
the
fast.
The intent is the negligent act.
Well, see, you got to
doing their job properly.
You have to remember how this is happening, though. I think there's a little piece of the puzzle that we've skipped. In that these guys are being given two different ID numbers. They literally look like single payments. You don't know that they're duplicates unless you match that up.
Yeah, and they're very hard. Even the IG has said in their report, it's very hard for them to find these payments. So because of a computer glitch that's been going on for years, it's causing the system not to recognize that it already paid somebody once. So, I know the Inspector General has investigated this, and they haven't found any employee being guilty of any type of misconduct. It's more of the managers ignoring the fact that this problem's happening. I mean, if you could prove fraud by ignorance, I think they would be guilty, but they have to show that they intentionally did this. And the managers, I think, intentionally didn't collect the money, but I don't think the fact that the payments went out twice was an intentional act. I think it was more of a negligent act on not giving the people enough time to work on the cases, not giving enough time to check everything, a system that allows this to happen. Our old system that we used for years, it was very hard to pay somebody twice because everybody was tracked by their social security number and everybody only has one of those. This system moved to a different way of paying people by a PID number. So you're just assigned a five-digit number and you could have two, three, I've seen up to five payments a month for one recipient. But when you're working on that specific claim, unless you really investigate, you won't see the other payments. So most workers, they're on a very strict timetable to get their work done. If you really checked all of these claims, you would lose your job because you wouldn't get enough cases done.
Mm.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thanks. Thanks, everybody. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Yeah, the crime part and the ridiculousness of why we can't ever seem to hold anyone accountable is making people just a little bit crazy. I mean, whether it's IRS and,
I know it's in
Lois Lerner's emails.
Every bureaucracy, it just seems like nobody's ever made accountable. If you get a government job, you're just, you're set. Just do whatever you want to do. And, if the heat comes down, just get ready to move because they'll pay for your move to another area and you can continue on.
Oop. We got Kristen on mute there.
Was that your head hitting the
wall? No, that was my elbow.
Oh.
Oops.
Uh-oh.
Lost one, found one. oh my gosh. Well, so when the Inspector General went through, regardless of which time it was, and they found that this was actually happening and they substantiated what you said, I didn't read the whole, it was like a 79-page report this last time, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the conclusion of that? At the end, I mean, what did they recommend now that they substantiated that people were being, paid multiple times?
The recommendations kind of leave the reader up to interpretation because they say, we recommend administrative action. Well, that can be anything from a verbal counseling to a termination. So when the Inspector General says, we recommend the VA to take administrative action against people involved in data manipulation, to an average employee, we want to say, what does that mean? And that definition is a very broad range of different possibilities. So they acknowledge that, what we were alleging was true. Almost everything was substantiated in the report. But the important thing I think that I learned through a lot of this with the Inspector General's office is when they come to the facility, they always go on a tour with management. So when they first came to our facility, I saw them at the end of the day, and they said, oh, we took a tour. We didn't find anything that you were talking about. And I said, well, who did you go on the tour with? And they told me who they went on the tour with, and to me it was strange because it was the people I was reporting. So I said, well, we can go on another tour. I can take you on a tour. And thankfully, I was at my desk when this all happened, and I did take them on a two-hour tour, and they ended up staying 2 months. So I think that if they really wanted to find things wrong at the VA, they shouldn't be toured around by management when they come investigate.
Sure. Well, I know that one of the other whistleblowers on your panel, Rusty Ann Brown, she had, and I'm going to say 140, 150 claims of the 13,000 that didn't exist and were told to be said to be duplicates and multiple excuses. But she had a whole chunk of them. She gave them to the Inspector General, and instead of those being processed through the Inspector General's office and looked into, they were given back to the VA to be processed. So, I mean, are you finding the same thing? Your evidence just goes right back to the same people that are hiding it?
I mean, to an extent, I do see that happening. Now, their devil's advocate answer to me is, well, how do you expect us to fix anything if we don't give it to the people to show them what they've done wrong and fix? If we find claims that are done wrong, we need the VA to fix them immediately or veterans are going to be harmed. And I do understand that. It's just after you fix those claims, those claims should be on a list, and you should see who's responsible for making those mistakes, and those people should be held accountable. It's just that last piece of it, of the equation here, is missing. So even at our office, with everything that's wrong in that IG report, somebody, especially the person in charge of our department, was responsible for a lot of those decisions. So at some point, you say, well, why are these people still allowed to make decisions?
Yeah.
I can't answer that.
yeah, no kidding. That is the question of the day. And it's amazing that, you know, FBI, Department of Justice, because they would get involved at the Inspector General's request, correct?
Yep.
And that's really who holds them accountable. So without the Inspector General's office being willing to step up and say, these guys right here broke the law, we need them dealt with, nothing happens. Near as I can
tell.
Yeah,
and I think that you need something I see a lot in the VA is because there's such a large amount of claims processed and a large amount of claimants, when you give evidence to the Inspector General's office, if you don't give a lot, then they're going to say, well, we have 825,000 claims done, you know, in this many months. You only showed us 80 instances of mistakes. So 80 out of 825,000 is such a small percentage. It's not a problem worth dealing with. So the trick to the way that we had success, in my opinion, was we didn't blow the whistle until we built a case. Kind of like if you go and arrest somebody for murder too early, you may not be able to prove your case. So here we had to collect evidence for a very long time so that when we decided to say something about it, if the IG did tell the VA what was going on, we at least had enough to prove our point.
Sure, they couldn't go back in and scrub it all.
Yeah. So, I mean, and, you know, sometimes I'm on my third computer since I worked there. My computer would just have problems, and certain things wouldn't be on my computer anymore. And I'd have to get a new computer. And, you know, so sometimes it's hard to prove these cases because you're not allowed to take file numbers out of the building. You can't take Social Security numbers out of the building. You need to keep the evidence there. But we are subject to random desk audits. So, you know, there's only so much evidence you can save on your desk before somebody wonders why this is sitting here.
Sure. So having copies of claims or files or whatever, and it's increasingly paperless, so then why would you have all these copies of files?
Yep.
It's an uphill run. We need to take one more break, and then we will have Kristen till the top of the hour. We're talking about the Philadelphia VA and kind of VA issues in general here this morning or this afternoon. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Told you.
Kristen fights authority, they hold a hearing. But then at the end of the hearing, the authority does kind of win because they don't get in trouble. Such a catch-22. As
long as there's a microphone involved.
Frustrating. Kristen, for people that are out there, you know, banging their head on their desk, if they're listening on computer, give them a snapshot of what it's like to do the right thing at the VA.
It's been the hardest thing I've ever done in my whole life. I, you know, now it's a lot different there. People support me, but when I first blew the whistle, I used to have a group that I'd walk to coffee with, and I noticed that they'd always have a reason why they couldn't go to coffee anymore. People sent emails around about me that I, you know, some workers that felt bad would give me a copy, and they would make fun of me or say that we're not going to get bonuses because of my big mouth. So things like that are hurtful when you feel like you're trying to help. And the thing about whistleblowing for the VA is there's really no prize at the end. You have to do it because you want to. Other agencies, they'll give you a reward or different things like that where maybe that encourages people to come forward. But when you're whistleblowing at the VA, you know that it has to be purely because you want to do the right thing, because there's not really... It can hurt your future career these days, I guess, when you apply for jobs. It's been a while since I've had to apply for a job, but apparently they use the computer a lot, and they will Google you or go on different media websites, social media, and, you know, my name is all over as testifying against my employer, so I feel like, you know, you kind of put your future career on the line as well when you do this kind of stuff. So I'm happy to say now, after my third hearing, that employees support me a lot more. Even some managers support the things that I'm doing. But for the first couple of years, it was sad. I remember days I cried at my desk all day.
Yeah, it's a long, lonely road sometimes. And we hear that from almost anybody who speaks up. And unfortunately, because the support structure is not there, a lot of folks they retire early, they quit. They get fired for being AWOL when they're out sick because their health is suffering for speaking up. Kind of isn't easy to do the right thing.
Well, it's amazing to me that the same rules don't apply as far as workplace violence, workplace, you know, this, that, and the other thing. They don't apply to the government agencies. You can pretty much.
Yeah, this wouldn't fly in private sector if you tormented your employee.
It's crazy.
You'd be hung by the thumbs.
Plus, I feel like in the private sector, if you go to work and it's a hostile work environment, the work's not going to get done, and it's going to affect your company and the bottom line of your company. But in the government, it's our taxpayer dollars that it's affecting. It's not affecting that manager's pocket, and I think that's a big problem.
Yeah, that's a huge problem. Do you see, because this has been so much on the forefront in the news, between the benefits administrations and the health, veterans health care, do you see any of it changing at all? It seems to be the same cast of characters. The undersecretary, Diana Rubens, has been very popular in the hearings. You know, similar, and the same inspector general, too. And they come in, say the same thing, and, you know, we go away and do it again.
It's because they're not made accountable.
Yeah, I haven't seen any changes, to be honest. I mean, they'll tell you that they fixed a lot of the problems, but that their definition of fixing something is, these 88 people were paid twice. Let's deal with those 88 cases, but not let's fix the initial problem so in the future people aren't paid twice. Or we have 96 boxes of return mail, and we went through all of it, and we made sure that the ones that were claims were worked on. Okay, but what are you doing to prevent those 96 boxes from piling up in the future? Obviously, there was a problem that made all that stuff sit and not get attention, possibly a shortage of workforce. So I don't see them attacking the actual problems. I see them being extremely reactive instead of proactive.
That's a really great point. I mean, that's exactly what they do. When they get busted, they clean it up, and then we go right back to the same
bad
habits.
Yeah, it's not a permanent fix.
Habits, yeah.
We have someone in the chat wants to know what effect the new director has had on the problem. So when they brought Ms. Rubens in, did anything change?
Not that I've seen. I mean... I if you ask the majority of the employees in our office, they'll say things have gotten worse.
Yeah, that's...
And I can't say that it's her fault. I really don't think she has the power to fix any of this stuff. When you have managers under her, maybe 15, 20 of them that lack integrity and morals, I don't know how she's going to fix that.
Yeah, true story.
And don't get me wrong. We have some very good managers at our building. They're not all bad. It just seems that the ones that are bad are the ones that get promoted.
Exactly. How can just regular folks out there, how can they be of help? Got any ideas?
Employees or people from the outside?
People from the outside or employees. I mean, employees, I think, need to speak up, because the more of them who do speak up, the better off they'll be. And if they go to their member of Congress and they don't care, go to another one. I mean,
that's what I did. The people in Congress that have helped me the most are not in my district. They're not the people that are responsible for where I live. From the very beginning, there's been certain people that have helped us because they want to help veterans, and I appreciate that. You know, to me, this isn't a political issue.
No.
Some people want to make it a political issue, but it's about human beings that served our country, and they deserve what we told them in the contract when they signed up for the U.S. military. They deserve the government to hold up on their end of the bargain, and if I'm going to work there, I'm going to make sure that we hold up on our end of the bargain. So if you are not an employee that works there and you've sent a claim in, be able to prove that you sent it in. Be able to prove that the VA received it, and that when you call and they say they lost it, speak out. Because the more people that can prove that the claim got there and it's not
better
can't be found anywhere in the building, I think that speaks for a lot.
It does speak volumes. Well, we will have to do this again, Kristen, because it's a big topic and there's tons to explore.
Oh, boy. It just flew by.
Thank you so much for being with us.
And also, the folks in the chat want to thank you as well, that you're loved and supported by more than you think.
Thank you. That means a lot.
Right on. Have a great day. You've been listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.